Last month, Moody's Investor Services laid it on the line. They told states to address climate change or risk a credit downgrade. A Moody's report names Georgia as one of a handful of coastal states that face the highest risks of damage from climate change. Christopher Flavelle is a climate change reporter with Bloomberg News, and he joins me on the line. Hi, Christopher.
Thanks for having me on.
And also with us is Jeanette Geyer. She's the State Director of Environment Georgia. It's good to have you as well.
Good morning.
So, Christopher, let's start with a comment, actually, from Michael Wirtz, who's the Vice President of Moody's and also their senior analyst. And he's speaking here to NPR explaining why credit rating agencies care about climate change.
Climate change also entails things like increased risk of droughts and wildfires and heat-related mortalities and heat waves. If you have a place that simply throws up its hands in the face of changes to climate trend, then we have to sort of evaluate it on an ongoing basis to see how that abdication of response actually translates to changes in its credit profile.
So, Chris, how did they decide? What criteria did Moody's use?
Well, they threw a lot of criteria out there, and what they didn't do, I think this is important, is they didn't say exactly how they would weight the different criteria, but for example, they said things like the share of coastal homes that are in a floodplain they're going to look at. They said the particular measures that a city or a state takes to deal with flooding risk or heat waves or wildfires will be a factor, and that makes a lot of sense. And when I talk to investors, they say they've been waiting a long time for this. I think the question is going to be not just does Moody's take account of these things, but do they actually end up reflecting credit scores?
Okay, so Jeanette, let me play you a comment. This is Rachel Kalita. She's the lead economist for the Union of Concerned Scientists, and she's speaking to NPR as well.
These types of risks are now being recognized in the marketplace because they're causing multi-billion dollars worth of damage already. What we're seeing through this type of a market-based signal is that, yes, people have to start making decisions now based on what is already baked in reality for many of these places.
How does the economic argument work? Because we've heard for many long times the moral argument, right? The responsibility argument, the health argument. How is the economic argument different?
I'm not sure that it is that different now. I think that your point that we have a moral argument to act, now we're seeing that there's an economic argument to act. And I would say that this is an economic argument for cities and states, but also taxpayers, because if a city is going to have to pay more to build a school or a road, taxpayers are going to have to foot that bill. So this is something that is going to play out for everyone.
So we've heard about efforts by, like, the city of Atlanta to make some changes. Overall, how is Georgia doing on preparing for climate change?
It's definitely a mixed bag. So you bring up Atlanta. I think Atlanta has one of the few climate action plans in the state. Tybee Island, I think, might have been one of the first places in the country
that
to actually come up with a sea level rise plan. But what I think you see is a real lack of comprehensive adjustment to climate change, both from a mitigation standpoint and an adaptation standpoint. So there's sort of two sides of the coin, and I would argue that we're not doing enough on both of those sides.
So, okay, let me play another comment. This is Brian Stone, because this is obviously, this Moody's decision has brought a lot of debate. Here's Brian Stone, who oversees the Urban Climate Lab at the Georgia Institute of Technology. He says, in the end, climate change is a public health issue.
It's a large threat. We know today and historically that heat and heat waves account for many more deaths every year in the United States than do tornadoes and hurricanes, flooding events. Actually, all of those events combined don't result in as many deaths each year than just heat waves do.
So, Christopher, does Moody's engagement in this issue change the public policy debate?
Yeah, I think perhaps the biggest question in climate change right now in the U.S. is what will it take to get cities and states to spend money now for a problem that is already apparent but isn't really overwhelming. I mean, we certainly have floods, and there are parts of the country that get hit by hurricanes with unusual frequency, but for most people, this is sort of a future issue. And I think for local policymakers, they've got to really need strong motivation to spend money on what usually are pretty expensive projects. It can be flood walls, it can be relocating homes. And the question they'll always ask is, what happens if I don't do this right now? And Moody's is saying, if you don't do it right now, you at least put at risk your access to cheap borrowing. And that, I think, is one of the biggest factors that scares local officials. And again, the question is going to be, how serious is that risk? And we don't know that. Moody's, when I interviewed them for this report, couldn't point to a specific example of downgrading a city or a state because they had not taken action. But I think by putting that threat on the table, there's now a really firm reason why officials that might otherwise have preferred to leave this to their successor, might now say, we cannot wait because we'll hurt everybody.
And Jeanette, Christopher is talking about the cost of addressing climate change, and it's no joke. But is everything that a city or state does to sort of prepare for climate change, is it all expensive?
No. And I think that's a really good point to make, is that there are certainly low-hanging fruit that cities could be jumping on top of right now.
I'll
go back to Tybee because they have some great examples. They spent a couple $100,000 retrofitting all of their buildings, making them more efficient, changing out light bulbs. They're saving $100,000 every single year on their electricity bills, paying off that investment, but that also mitigating for climate change. They also have a really straightforward ordinance that requires all the new driveways on Tybee Island to be pervious. So that means that when you dump a bucket of water on it, the water
it
doesn't rush into the stormwater. So those are some really great and simple examples of things that cities can do that don't cost a ton of money, have good paybacks, that can help send them on their way. But so we should not pretend that some of this stuff is not going to be expensive, because certainly there's going to be some. We're going to need some significant investments.
And the thing here, Christopher, is that Moody's has sort of laid out criteria of how they know if a state is addressing climate change or not, but they haven't made any decisions about what constitutes good policy for climate change, right? They haven't picked winners.
That's exactly right. One thing they have not addressed, and I think this is correct on their part, they have not said, here are the steps we want to see happen, and here's how we're going to grade them or rank them. I think the reason is every place is different, and to the point we just heard, there will be places where you can have small fixes that are not extravagantly expensive, and they make a difference. I think in most cases, and Miami just passed a measure to borrow $200 million for sea level rise, they said this is just a down payment. In most cases, you're looking at the hundreds of millions, possibly billions of dollars, and Moody's, I think, is aware that these decisions are just starting, right? It's a conversation. We're now at the stage where people realize something has to happen. Then we look at what is it that has to happen. Then how do you pay for it? Then who gets hurt? Who gets helped first? This is a very, very long process. And I think the most charitable explanation for Moody's is they realized they had a role in starting it, but they can't really finish it.
So let's hear again. This is Brian Stone. He's with the Urban Climate Lab at Georgia Institute of Technology. And he says, actually, when it comes down to cost, putting it off is quite expensive.
The earlier you start to respond, the more success you're going to have, and the less costly it will be, in both in terms of the outlays that cities must make in the country, but also in terms of health. And so we can make the most progress today in terms of offsetting future warming. The farther we get down this road, the harder it will be to control the problems.
So, Jeanette, if it's going to be more expensive if you wait, what is the obstacle in Georgia, do you think, to getting a more comprehensive climate plan?
I think one of the biggest ones is definitely politics. So for better or for worse, climate change is a very partisan issue. It gets dragged into political debates.
Meaning we're still having a debate in Georgia over whether it's real?
I think that's certainly the case, yeah. How far should you go to really deal with it? So when you start talking about billions of dollars, and you're skeptical about whether or not you need to deal with climate change to begin with, that's a tricky conversation to start. And so that's why I think this is so significant, because I think cities will start really seeing sort of a bottom line change to how they need to start adapting to climate change.
Well, what do you think, Christopher? Does this announcement from Moody's, I guess, change the debate over whether climate change is A, real, and B, man-made?
I think so. I think what I hope is true is that you've got local and state officials around the country who are aware of the science but don't want to upset some parts of their constituency by saying that this is real. And instead, now that Moody's and probably others have said, if you don't address this, you'll be in trouble financially, those officials now have an excuse. They can now say to their constituents, who might be upset if they say they're dealing with climate change, they can say, look, it's not my fault. Moody's made me. If I didn't do this, then we would lose access to cheap borrowing. And I think that's a very powerful potential workaround for officials who maybe don't want to have to convince everyone this is real, but perhaps know themselves that it is. And now it's not really in their hands anymore. They can say, I'm not the bad guy. I'm just responding to the market. And that can be a powerful line.
We have about a minute left, Jeanette. Moody's has focused especially on the coast, but it's all of Georgia. You're nodding your head, right? Where's our first step?
Absolutely. So it's not just sea level rise. It's also cities dealing with air pollution, dealing with flooding. It's rural areas dealing with droughts and then dealing with downpour. So it's hard to answer where's our first step, but I think we do have some good examples of first steps that I think we should applaud and continue to hold up. So Atlanta has a climate action plan. I mentioned Tybee. St. Mary's, I know, is working on one. So I think there are some places that are starting to act, and it would be great to hold those up and hope that other places in Georgia follow as well.
That is Jeanette Gehr of the group Environment Georgia. We also spoke with Christopher Flavelle, a climate change reporter with Bloomberg News. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.